And now, from the Green 960 studios in San Francisco, this is an organic conversation with Helga Hellberg and Mark Mulcahy.
And welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, ecology, stories from the land, relationships, and life itself. We're your hosts, Helga Hellberg.
And Mark Mulcahy.
And Mark, it's the Green Festival in San Francisco. The year is kicking off into April now with all these amazing food festivals and green festivals coming up. Are you going this weekend?
No, I actually have a leadership forum that so I won't be there. I'll be in the city.
You are there in a different capacity.
I'll be there in a different capacity, correct.
But the Green Festival in San Francisco, it's really a great convention from food companies to nonprofits. The attendance is ridiculous. There are people in line half an hour before the show even opens. This weekend, Saturday and Sunday, today and tomorrow, at the San Francisco Concourse on 8th Street. And also coming to Chicago, the Green Festival, May 14th and 15th, and to Seattle the week after that, May 21st to 22nd. And actually, one of our co-hosts earlier in the Green Morning on Saturdays spoke there last year.
Yeah, Beth Greer was a speaker last year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you can go there, and it covers everything from green home building, how to clean your house. There's tons of food, great booths and exhibitions, to smart cars, to hybrids, to everything that's out there.
And there's a big focus on labeling this year?
Yes. Yes, there's a big campaign, millions against Monsanto, on demanding GMO labeling on products. And I think they even want to take that outside of the concourse area, the exhibit area, and maybe visit some of the grocery stores in that proximity that offer food within the health food aisle that might contain genetic engineered ingredients. So that's it's a worthwhile effort to check out and participate in. Absolutely. We're all about labeling and the right to know. The Green Festival, San Francisco, this weekend, today, Saturday, and tomorrow, Sunday. Check out your local listings on Green Festivals, plural, greenfestivals.org. Again, that's www.greenfestivals.org. Yes, you're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And we are very excited about our guests today, a bunch of them. We have Tommy Atkins, we have Miss Jeremiah, and many others. We're talking about tropical fruit with our wonderful produce experts, Earl Herrick and Mark Mulcahy. More on that when we come back right after the break. Stay tuned.
Now I'm the king of the swingers, oh, the jungle VIP. I've reached the top and had to stop, and that's what's bothering me. I want to be a man cub, and stroll right into town, and be just like the other men. I'm tired of mugging around. Oh, ooby-doo, I want to be like you. I want to walk like you, talk like you, choo-choo. You see, it's true. An ape like me can learn to be human too.
And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And today's show is about what's in season. And he was just singing about a man cup. I want to be like you guys. We're here with Earl Herrick, the founder and owner of Earl's Organic Produce, the leading San Francisco-based organic produce distributor focused solely on organic fruits and vegetables. Earl, so great to have you be part of the show again. Every 4 weeks, What's in Season is becoming a regular part of the program. Every 4 weeks, we'll discuss what's in season, how to pick it, how to store it, and how to prepare it, and of course, how to eat it. And today's show is extra exciting to me, and I know it's kind of the special guest, Jeremiah, but it's this dinosaur egg that we will discuss later, one of my hands-down favorite fruits ever. And I believe many people have never tried one. It took me up until 2 years ago for me to have my first Jeremiah ever. And so, Earl, welcome back. It's great to have you.
Yeah, good morning, guys.
Yes.
And wow.
And really, I'm a man cup here.
Yeah.
You guys, I mean, your knowledge about...
We must be monkey kings. Yes. Something.
Well, your knowledge on produce is just, it's so fun to be part of and to pretend I have something to say too, but it's really, I'm in awe every time. Last time we talked about cucumbers and strawberries and asparagus. What an asparagus season this year, still.
Yeah, well, it's come on. It's backed off. The weather, it is so sensitive to the rain and the cold nights. It can stop in a dime, and it takes a little while to generate again because it is in the soil. So when that soil gets cold, boy, it takes a while to warm up again and start production. So, you know, spurts and starts. And right now, I think we're in a pretty good rhythm.
Yeah.
And so where is it now? I mean, because last show we talked about that there were different regions where it was. And I know the Stockton Asparagus Festival is this weekend.
Yeah, and luckily it is here. It's in the whole Salinas Central Valley here. We're talking about Stockton, Salinas, Gonzales, all the way up to eventually it's going to approach pretty soon up to the Sacramento Valley. So all that production will be very strong. Probably until through June. It might even dip into July, depending again how hot the summer gets, what kind of spikes there are.
Yes, and we talked about like how to pick the perfect asparagus, how to store it, what to. You had this great trick about how to snip off the bottom, how much to cut off, and how to prepare them. Mark, you had some great recipes, including on our website. If you missed that show, you can go back to anorganicconversation.com and see the podcast or, of course, on iTunes, What's in Season with Earl Herrick. We were discussing cucumbers and strawberries, asparagus, and citrus. And citrus was kind of the early look on what's coming in now, which is really tropicals. And Earl, you brought a whole bunch. Mark, what are
literally.
We? What are we?
And it's so darn colorful too.
It's so gorgeous, and it's like, I mean, broccoli is exciting, but you know, when you start in October or November in April, it's not that exciting anymore. It's exciting. No, we shouldn't say that.
You know,
shout out to broccoli, but this is where it's at for me.
This is exciting.
I don't know why. Yeah. Wow.
Well, and I actually think, you know, for a lot of us, April is an in-between month. You know, it's that month, you know, we're not going to have peaches yet or nectarines or melons, even though they're still in the store. They're not coming from local.
Didn't you write about that just now? 2 days ago? In between.
Funny that it's on my mind.
The time in between.
But now's that time where you can really make the most of your tropicals. I mean, because of the society we live in, we see these things all the time, but they're not always great. And they're not, you know, even though they're always there, it's even like asparagus when it comes from Peru and Argentina and these things. Yeah, it's good, but it's not being cut as fresh. So it's not, I don't think it's as good as it is right now.
And you're right. It's like we are fading out definitely out of the winter crops and the spring is not quite in. We see the same varieties roughly in the grocery store, but all of a sudden, as you always say, Earl, they come from maybe, you know, 2,000 miles further away, which changes the quality and the flavor. So knowing that, that's what this show is all about.
And I have one quick thing. The other day I was in the store, and we'll get off of asparagus and move on to these tropicals. But I was in the store, and I was shopping, and I saw that they had asparagus, and I thought, oh, maybe I'll pick some up. And so I grabbed it, and the first thing I did is I started smelling it. And I could see that this woman was watching me smell the asparagus, you know, because she was looking at it, and she's, you know, kind of, I said, you know why I'm doing this. And she
a teaching moment.
And she was saying, are you Mark from An Organic Conversation?
No, neither of those things happened. But she did say...
she wanted to.
She said, no, why are you smelling it? And I said, because that's how you're going to know it's fresh. And you're going to know because it'll have a nice grassy smell. If it smells off at all, then you shouldn't buy it. It won't be fresh, no matter the price. And you know, I walked away, and she was smelling several bunches of asparagus, and so
and she kept
my
smelling.
Work is done here. I must move on.
You know, so often what you're describing here is really common sense, but we don't know we can apply it there because it's, you know, produce or something is a little unfamiliar to us. We apply common sense. Obviously, it smells right or it doesn't, and that's a great indicator.
You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And today with us, Earl Herrick, produce goddess, god, wizard. Now with our every 4 weeks episode of What's in Season. And, you know, when it comes to vegetables, it's easier Earl, you always say look for the vibrancy, look for the color, the freshness, the perkiness. With tropicals, they all look from the outside to a lay cup, like layman cup, a little dull. I can't really tell from the outside which mangoes are good right now or if that cherimoya is ripe yet or not, right? So what's your general, Mark, where do we want to start with this?
Well, we were going to start with mangoes. bananas, but because all bananas also have, they're the number one selling fruit in America, right? And
which
India,
many people actually don't know. When I heard that first from you years ago, I was like, wow, bananas, no other food, right? No other produce?
It's the number one selling. And so, you know, and then it's followed by apples and citrus. And
well, one of the reasons is it's around all year. Bananas are always around, where apples will come and go, grapes and berries. But bananas are the steady. Almost everybody is always going to have some bananas in the house.
And it's easy to eat, and it's easy to take with you. And it's
very uncomplicated.
Great nutrition. Yeah, very uncomplicated. You can have a relationship with a banana.
That's right. If it's bright yellow, I'm going to eat this guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
You said you got two produce guys in the house. I mean, hell, this is how it goes.
Yes, but I don't see any bananas here.
No.
That's because the
they are so familiar.
Everyone knows. Oh, my goodness.
Well, a thing about bananas is they are hard to pick out sometimes. You go to the store and you get them and they're really, really green. You know, what do you do with those?
Yes.
You know, sometimes they're actually a greenish gray color. You know, what do you do with those?
And they're always picked green, right, Earl? When we visited produce dock at Earl's Organic Produce, you were saying, no, they all arrive or are picked green.
They are picked green and arrive green.
And you can actually ripen them if you do it well, if you know how to do it.
Oh, yeah. It requires ripening from the distribution point all the way to at home on your counter. You want to, at the store, I mean, obviously, like an avocado, you want to eat it now. And occasionally stores will have a bright yellow with little brown spots. That's great to eat right now. You know, that's not going to live long in your house.
Right.
So there are actually numbers to these colorations, but you want to pick something that has a good vibrant yellow, and it can have some green tips, which is probably what you want. Take it home, have it sit in a room temperature. Don't ever refrigerate bananas, and in a day or two, just watch it. And then also you can try it, and if it is too starchy, you know, it's going to have that chalky taste, then you know you're not going to do that one again.
Well, I find that with bananas, and I bet between the three of us, we might all have even a different way that we eat them. At my house, you know, I like them when they're a little riper. I like that sweetness. But my wife eats them with a little bit of green still on the stem and a little green on the tip because she likes the texture better that way.
Interesting.
And a little bit of starchiness there. So, you know, everybody picks them out differently. But I want to go back to when bananas arrive. First of all, they're picked green. And they're shipped over to the country, and they arrive at the distributor. And what happens, you know, what happens there to get them to the store before we even get into how to ripen them at home?
Well, first of all, it's all tropical. So this is coming from any of the tropical or subtropical countries, whether it's Peru, Ecuador, Mexico, Honduras. We favor the Peruvian one because it rains less there, so there's less trouble. It's a very stable climate there, rainfall. So when it comes, so they're picked green, they're shipped green, they're boated over, could take a week. And when they arrive, they have to be staged because you don't want hundreds of cases ripening at once. So you stage them in ripening rooms. And these ripening rooms are rooms that you can control the entire environment. And what you're, the most important thing you're doing there is introducing an element of ripeness of a ripening agent, which is ethylene, which is a naturally occurring gas that is given off by any fruit that is ripening.
And bananas actually give off ethylene once they've started ripening.
Exactly. Right? So what you're doing is kick-starting that. And you're doing that with a pressurized canister that's in a room, and you also have a high humidity, 85 to 95%. That's a key to getting that real bright color.
Mimicking the tropical climate they're grown in.
You really are. Yeah. You really are. And you want to keep bananas between 56 and 65 degrees. You don't want to go higher or lower. Higher, you're going to get that funny texture. Inside, it's going to get, it's actually going to cook them. And if it's lower than that, it's not going to create the sugars. Mm-hmm. It's going to have too much latex in it. And so it's a high maintenance piece of fruit to have.
And then, Mark, you always say when you, how do you ripen a banana at home, that you have some great tips or tricks where you put them in the back. You never want to put them next to other produce, right? Because that ethylene that they outgas will ripen everything.
You are coming along here.
He's
yes.
paying attention. Yes. This guy's paying attention.
Paying attention. Absolutely. Well, at our house, we do the banana
Not
dance.
Not condescending
it's actually,
at all.
They come home from the store.
They start over, Mark? It's
like a banana dance in the fruit bowl. And they come home from the store, and they get put in the fruit bowl. And then I see that they're in the fruit bowl, so I take them out of the fruit bowl. And then someone comes along and says, oh, these should be in the fruit bowl. And so what's happening is, because, to go with your point, is bananas are one of the highest ethylene producers. Apples are second to those. They produce a lot of ethylene too. So when you got all this fruit in a bowl, what you're doing is you've got all this ethylene that is being released by the fruits, and so it's going to ripen everything much quicker. So unless you're going to eat a whole bowl of fruit in a few days, you actually want to keep your bananas, or only keep a couple in the bowl that you want to ripen, especially if you picked them a little bit green on there. And if they only had greenish bananas at the store, then you probably, if you want any sooner than later, then you would stick them in a bag with an apple. That's a very common ripening, because then you've got the ethylene from the apple helping to ripen the banana. And then you close that up at room temperature.
Crazy. You're listening to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And with us, Earl Herrick. What's in season? We are talking tropical fruits today. Mangoes, pineapple, bananas, and cherimoya. So you can, at home, what's the range? How can you influence the ripening from what day to what day? If you put two apples with a banana, by next day they are ripe, even though they were green before.
It probably depends on the temperature of your house. It probably depends on
the condition of the bananas.
The condition of the bananas, like how green we're talking. If it's a very light green.
But you can really speed it up.
If it's a very light green going towards yellow, you could probably ripen it in a day, yeah. Mm-hmm. If it's more towards the green side, it might take an extra day or two, but it will be much faster, because in the bag, the ethylene gas is concentrated in the bag, and so it's just sitting there.
How do you slow it down? How do you?
You would take it away from ethylene.
Here, I got an apparatus here that I found. It's a wrought iron piece that sits on a counter that actually comes up at an angle. And with a hook in the end, you put your hand of bananas on that hook.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
So it's actually suspended right there. Just
in midair.
Midair.
At least. Yeah.
That
good
allows
circulation.
Good circulation. And that'll keep them the longest.
And you know what? I sure wish we were already filming this show, because then people could have seen that whole hand action that you just did describing.
Yes.
That.
We will soon, though.
Great.
Great. And never in the fridge, right? That's the golden rule for any tropicals, or specifically bananas?
Well, first of all, it's a tropical, so it doesn't like to be cold, right?
56 degrees.
Yeah. You know. So, and most of our refrigerators run at 40, so it doesn't like it. Now, if you have a very, very, very ripe mango and you need to keep it like an extra day or so, you could stick it in the fridge knowing that you better eat it, because it doesn't like that, but it will keep it an extra couple of days. But if it's firm at all, you wouldn't want to put it in the fridge. Now, bananas, once they've turned ripe, they can go in the fridge and will hold up for 2 weeks, but the skin will turn black and you will lose the texture, but they still will still be usable. Or you can take them and cut them up and freeze them, and they'll last for a long time.
That was the last question I had. Can you take them out? Would you ever take them out? And how do you freeze them? With skin?
You could freeze the whole banana.
With skin?
With skin, and just stick it right in your freezer. And then take it out and stick it in a smoothie.
Yeah, I always peel them back, put them in a little Tupperware, put them in there. And then when I want to make a smoothie, I got them. You don't have to worry about a ripe one. You got them automatic. And what's great, too, when you put them in the blender, is it'll froth up a little bit.
Oh, nice.
And that's a nice little added thing to the...
So you don't thaw it. You just cut it up because you can cut it even if it's frozen, right?
Absolutely,
So you can do it either way. You can either take the time to peel it and then cut it up and put it in that Tupperware thing, or you can just stick them in whole if you mm-hmm. want to too.
Great.
But I want to make sure that we don't go too far. Is you mentioned gassing with ethylene?
Yeah.
Back at the distributor before exactly. they get to the store in order to get them ripe for the store.
Precisely.
Now, gas at the distributor, that I would think that might scare a few people when they hear that you're gassing bananas. I know when mm-hmm. I was a retailer and when I was a man cub, and I used to hear the word gas and I'd say, I'm staying away from that because I know that can't be good.
Yeah, that's a good point, Mark. The main thing to understand is that what you're introducing is ethylene, which is the same product that the banana or any piece of fruit is releasing. So it's a total natural concept. All it is that you're concentrating it, you're creating a jump start so that it starts the ripening process. That's really all you're doing. So the bananas aren't staying in that condition more than a day or two. Mm-hmm. Then you're taking them out.
Wait a little.
You're maintaining a temperature between 56 and 65, and you're shipping them out to the retailer. I'm a distributor at different colors because different stores want very green, light green, maybe just green tipped. Other customers say, do you have anything I can put right on my shelf right away? Obviously, as they ripen, they will bruise easier, more easily. So generally, what's being shipped sure. from us is a light green banana.
And so I just real quick, Helga, just so we can finish this point before we go on break.
Yes.
Is so organic bananas
yes.
are That's gassed as well with ethylene gas.
Absolutely. Yeah, because it is totally okay by all the certifiers. Mm-hmm.
But you always make a point, Mark, any fruit, any produce, especially tropicals and especially bananas, should be, if we can, bio-organically. Why?
Well, if you go to, you know, most people say you don't have to worry about organic, bananas being organic, right?
Because
you don't eat the peel. Mm-hmm. Well, I have a hard time with that because that's only looking at part of the story. And, you know, a lot of times we like to get further into the story here on an organic conversation. Bananas have a history that is not a real positive history. And they are a very sensitive plant. And so there's a lot of things like black psittacoca and some different diseases, and they have a really hard time when these diseases are in these plantations, and they have to use some very toxic chemicals, and they put them in fungicide baths before they get put into boxes that the boxes themselves are impregnated with fungicides to actually keep them from molding on the trip over. And if you look at a conventional banana box, you actually will see it says, do not reuse this box.
Mean when you see people moving with them?
Yeah, they move with them. The farmer's market, people are bringing extra fruit in there and things like that. And a lot of the chemicals that they use on conventional bananas have been shown to cause sterility in the male workers and birth defects in their children. And so there's... Even though it may not
yes.
bother you directly, it makes a difference in the world. So hard on
the tropical environment, hard on the way they are shipped in terms of human health. And yeah, if you can, buy organic bananas. Better for you, better for the environment. Thanks, Mark.
There's on the organic end.
A quick break, but
yeah, they're going through a bath after they're harvested, and a quick bath, or some people will use a grape seed extract mm-hmm. in that, and then many people now are using a stretchy film wrapping around the very crown to eliminate the possibility of crown rot. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the things that are going on organically.
Yeah,
nice.
Yeah.
Great. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Helberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And we're talking tropicals today with Earl Herrick, What's in Season. Next up will be Miss Mango and Mr. Pineapple. Stay tuned. Spasm waiter dropping to his knees.
My name is Earl Herrick, and I am the owner of Earl's Organic Produce, a San Francisco Bay Area distributor fully committed to organic produce. From the time one could find organic fruits and vegetables only in natural food stores to now, when schools and fine restaurants feature organic, we have been forging relationships with growers for over 20 years. If you want to offer the finest organic produce to your employees or customers, find us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines, without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Sungevity, a company specializing in residential solar, is on a mission to bring solar to the mainstream market. Sungevity is changing the solar industry by making solar energy simple, efficient, and affordable for every homeowner. In most cases, Sungevity doesn't even need to visit your home to provide an estimate. Just plug in your address and we'll use satellite images and aerial photography to determine your home's solar potential. Go to Sungevity.com or call 866-SUN-4ALL to make going solar a reality today.
Hi, I'm Peter Walsh. My wife and I founded Manika Jewelry with the intention to offer a different kind of jewelry. Beautiful, made by local Bay Area artists, and without a social or environmental compromise. Our featured designers use reclaimed precious metals and Kimberly certified gemstones. It's jewelry made with heart and soul. Come visit our store just off Union Square at 11 Maiden Lane in San Francisco, or visit our website at manikajewelry.com.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And with us in the studio is Earl Herrick, the founder and president of Earl's Organic Produce, a San Francisco-based produce distributor solely focused on organic fruits and vegetables since 1988. And Mark and Earl are produce wizards. And we're talking tropical today, tropical fruits. You guys said one more thing on bananas, yes? The grayness of bananas. What's up with that?
Well, the whole ripening, at least part of the ripening process, one thing that gets unnoticed is when you actually take a finger, that's one banana itself, one way to determine ripeness and maturity.
It's called a finger?
Yeah.
One banana?
Because a bunch is called a hand.
Yeah, how about that?
Give me the hand.
Yeah, so I'll buy a whole hand, take them home, and I'll pull off a finger at a time. And when you look at the fingers, they have ridges on them. The more ridges and the more pronounced they are, the less mature fruit that is. So that's one of the indicators that back at the source in the original country, as they're harvesting, they want to get... So in other words, you can get a finger with six ridges on it. That's going to be too immature. They want to be harvesting them with five or four. Then as they ripen, it expands and the finger actually can become completely round. So there's no ridges at all. That's when you know you have a nice mature piece of fruit.
You look at the ridges, I look at the squares. So the more edges... Basically, the banana has the more unripe it is.
Correct, and probably.
Wow, that's fascinating.
Yeah, so the more round, the more smooth, the better. That's not to say that little ridges is not good, but the less ridges, the better.
Huh.
In addition to that, I'm sure all of us have experienced what I call graying, and that's the coloration of a hand. Of a banana, the color is a gray. It's kind of a, it's not a, it's a green, a
Again,
dull
the
green.
The vibrancy is not there
at all. Yeah.
And that's an indicator mostly from a chill. That's a chill aspect, and that can happen almost anywhere. But generally, it doesn't show up for a couple days. So it can happen on the boat when it comes. Maybe they're being shipped in the middle of the winter and they're arriving in Detroit and it's below zero. If they're not handled properly, maintained that 56 to 65 degrees. It's not to say that a small exposure is going to do that, but any length of time, I would say a couple of hours.
So as a customer, what do you, when you see that they're not quite as perky green or perky yellow, they won't taste as well, or they don't ripen
they will not ripen very well, and I've definitely experienced that they don't have that edge of sweetness and maturity that you're looking for. Now occasionally I've eaten them where they're okay, but they are affected sometimes to the point of just a little, other times to the point of, you know, they're unedible. So they are not to be bought if you can avoid it.
Sure.
Did I say that right?
Yeah, you did.
Avoid gray bananas.
There you go.
Yeah.
And of course, they're powerhouses of health, potassium, as all tropicals are, right? Rich sources of vitamin C and
B6.
Yes.
Vitamin A. Mm-hmm.
Beta carotenes, minerals, vitamins, antioxidants. And so is the next one. Shall we move on?
Oh, yeah.
Pineapple.
We shall. You know what I love about pineapples is before, when they first came to Europe, they were reserved for royalty. I mean, obviously, you see this thing with this big crown of leaves.
Yeah, and it's no got wonder.
This big, it's like bulbous, you know, bottom. Yeah, just looking at this
extraordinary
thing.
Fruit, right? From the look to the sweetness to, there's nothing like pineapple.
And when you say before they came to Europe, so they were pretty much originated in South America. That's what most people are... consensus.
Columbus looked at them and thought they looked like a pine cone. So that's where that name came from for a pineapple.
I'm not going to comment on him. But yeah. Yes. No, well, good.
And the interesting thing is when they first arrived in the States, still the average person couldn't afford them. So what they would do is these purveyors of pineapples would rent them to people to put on as a centerpiece of their table. And so you'd rent it for an afternoon, and then the person would come get it from you and take it to somebody else's party.
Are you pulling a man cup leg here?
I'm not. And they would take it to someone else's party, and this would happen for several days, you know, whoever they could get.
Just to have them? Just to display to have them?
Well, I mean, no one else has got it, right? It was a big deal. And then they would then take that pineapple once it was ripened and sell it to somebody. So they got all these rents out of it, and then we were able to sell it.
That's a sustainable piece of fruit.
No kidding.
Incredible.
Wow. Well, that has changed.
If I may, one of the interesting things that I found out about it is that, so it's indigenous to South America, and definitely Columbus is credited with taking it back to Europe. And from there, it actually made its way to Asia. And then the Philippines actually introduced it, the Polynesians introduced it to Hawaii. So it actually went east.
Halfway around.
Yeah.
To come back.
Yeah, absolutely interesting. And then I believe that Columbus didn't bring it to the Americas at all.
No.
Yeah.
No, it came much later. He brought it back to Europe, and then
circuitous route. And I guess Captain Cook in the late 18th century actually is credited with bringing it from Hawaii to the States. Mm-hmm. So kind of bingo.
Yes. I think pineapple is one of the hardest to pick fruit. Because I just, you know, still today, I mean, with mangoes, you can feel them, you can smell them. Any fruit, I have kind of an angle, any kind of produce, actually, I have kind of an angle to determine, is this good enough or should I try it at least? You wouldn't really ask the produce guy to cut open a pineapple.
Yes,
Mark,
you would.
Mark
won't let me finish, but Mark would say, yes, you should. That seems like, wow, I mean, it's like this 2-pound big pine cone shaped, gorgeous. You wouldn't just cut into it. And if you don't cut into that one, you don't know if the one next to it is, you know, will taste the same if they let you try that one. So it's such a difficult foreign, and yet it's in every drink, it's in every recipe, sweet sour sauce, right? It's an anti-inflammatory agent. It's packed with health benefits. It burns fat. It's like, it's so good for you, and it's pretty pricey. Can be.
Yeah.
And it's hard to pick. What's your advice? What do you do with that?
Well, you want to go, Mark?
Yeah, well.
You ask the produce guy, too?
Well,
cut one open.
Well, Helga, I think many people feel exactly as you do when it comes to picking out a pineapple. And everybody pulls the leaf off the top. When I grew up as a young produce man cub, That was what I was told by my produce manager.
If it comes out,
if that
it's
leaf
ripe.
Comes out, yep. then that pineapple is ripe.
Oh, good. Never even heard that.
That's, well, so. it's not particularly good information.
But it's not true.
And then some people smell the bottom, which might be there might be something to it.
If I may, I think, you know, there's lots of things, and we will get into them. But I think basically for almost all fruit, if you can smell it and you smell that bouquet, then it's going to be good. That's the one thing that you can count on. If you can smell it, peach, tropical, go for it. And the other thing is the weight. You know, if it's a grapefruit, if it's an apple or a peach, a pineapple, if it feels heavy
for its size.
Mm-hmm. Now, again, that can be, wow, what is that? Well, it's a matter of going out and just handling them.
But there are three issues with that. One is a pineapple that is not ripe is really, you can't eat. It's really so sour, right? It doesn't have any sugar yet. So that's, and once you cut it open, it doesn't ripen well afterwards. When it's too ripe, maybe it's because it's too ripe, or advise me if there's a third component to it. I had one last night and it was just off. It wasn't really that it has already started the fermentation or was just too ripe. It seemed like parts of it, the sugar was perfect, and other parts it was just really an off taste. And I know what fermented fruit tastes like. That wasn't fermented.
It just tasted
like almost metallic. It was just weird. What happened?
Yeah, well, one thing, first of all, as any piece of fruit is on its tree or bush, there is a part that's going to be lower. It's the opposite of it's the blossom end, not the stem end. The blossom end will always be more flavorful, higher in sugar, because that's gravity is pulling it down. So when you say parts of the pineapple, it tastes different, that's what that's
how
about.
What do you mean gravity is pulling it down? How does that affect the flavor?
Because the sugars will go down to the bottom of the fruit because it's hanging from a tree.
Gotcha.
So the gravity will actually pull it down.
Oh, that's not fair.
Well, it's good to know.
Yeah, of course.
And so most pineapples, when they get here, will ripen from the bottom up. That when you see the, as
yes,
it ripens,
right.
you
yes,
see the ripening
right.
come from the bottom
and yellow
up.
Is ripe, right? Because some, they were all kind of firm and green, and then
Depends on the variety of the pineapple.
And not always.
Okay,
see, that's the tricky thing here. I don't think we can actually say there is any one thing that'll do it. And that's why
back to man cup land.
So, I mean, you can say it smells great and it feels heavy, and your chances are pretty darn good. But to say
no guarantee.
Yeah, but to say it's all golden, it's going to be right. Not necessarily. Some people go by the eyes that are on the pineapple itself, the little segments. Some people feel when they're all the same size or when they're more prominent, more defined, that means they're ready. Not necessarily.
So what is the golden rule?
Well, you know what? Actually, I'm glad you're asking that, because Earl has asked his distributors. I went to several websites because you cannot get a consistent answer on this, and I've got three or four things here on my screen.
It makes me feel better. It is difficult.
But it is difficult.
Good.
And I mean, I've always relied on my nose, and you don't want any type of fermented smell.
Well, everyone has your nose in the back. apply.
Yeah.
Can you make
Where's
an
Mark's
app?
Nose? Where's
that would
Mark
be great.
Yeah,
there's
Mark's
an app.
Nose app.
There's an app for you.
But it should have a nice sweet floral smell to it. Yeah. The eyes, I've heard, make a difference if they're not shriveled, because that means it's an older pineapple.
The eyes are what?
The eyes are the little squares. If you look at a pineapple, you'll notice that it's got little diamonds or squares all over it. So those would be considered the eyes. So you want those to be vibrant and fresh looking, not shriveled into each other. And another thing that I was reading on one of the many of the several things that told me how to pick out a pineapple, because I just wanted to, it's so confusing. One of them said that if you take it home and you store it upside down, that any sugar that's in it will drain into the top of the pineapple.
There you go.
But a pineapple does not get any more sugar. If it's picked too green in Hawaii or Costa Rica or Peru,
you can't ripen it like a banana.
It'll come here, but it won't. It'll ripen, but it won't gain any more sugar.
Mm. You know, if I may, let me quote from a website just to kind of give more context. It is difficult to judge when the pineapple is ready to be harvested. The grower must depend a great deal on experience. Size and color change alone are not fully reliable indicators. I mean, that's really the truth. I think there are some basic rules that we've talked about, you know, weight and fragrance, and also anytime fruit is shriveled, you know, that's an age indicator. It's probably over the hill. So those are just some things. Otherwise, buy them, get samples when you can, kind of derive your own experience.
So, Helga, now I want to go back to that thing with, you know, you were saying, well, you can't ask someone to cut open this 2-pound pineapple that may cost $10. I would put that back to you is now do
how
you,
can you not?
How can you not?
No,
you're
kidding.
About ready to spend $10 on this thing.
Yes,
and last
right.
night you had an experience, and if you bought an organic pineapple, you probably spent anywhere from $5 to $10 for that thing, you know, at this point in time.
Yep.
And so...
And it was somewhat satisfying, but if I had known, I
not
wouldn't
the
have,
way you originally
no,
described
no,
it, it wasn't.
If I had known, I wouldn't have bought it. So that's always the best indicator. Would you go back today and get another one? No,
absolutely
not. So, yes, in a way, I wasted $6.
So,
well, but on the other hand, you know, it is you're developing your own experience. If you love pineapples, you're going to continue to choose them. So just put that away, register that. Next time, you can apply that.
Yes. Quick one, Mark, on how do you store them at home? Fridge? No.
Well,
on the counter?
You wouldn't want to store them in your fridge until you've cut them. Once you cut them, then you have to store them in your fridge.
And they're good for 4 or 5 days?
They can easily last. Yeah. I mean, if you have, if it's sugar, it's all about the amount of sugar in the pineapple, because that's going to determine how long it holds. If it's a really, really sweet pineapple, then it won't last as long.
And how tight
it will be eaten anyway.
And how tight your Tupperware is.
Yeah.
I mean, if you got no air going to it, it's going to last longer, of course. You can refrigerate tropicals, you know, for a very short period of time, you know, or if you come in, maybe it was in your car half the day and it was 90 degrees. You brought it in and you can almost see it steaming. Put it in the refrigerator, get that heat off of it, and then pull it back out.
Oh, gotcha. And freezing, no problem, right? Same thing with smoothies.
Yeah, I would
change the texture of it if you freeze it, but you can. Last thing is if you really want to know, once you've cut it up, most stores, when they cut up fruit, when you buy cut up fruit already, give it a 3-day shelf life.
Yeah.
Then they pull it.
Yeah, I'll try to find that it was cut that day. That's always.
Mm-hmm. Yep, there you go.
And again, with everything, as Mark says, get a sample. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Helbert.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And with us, Earl Herrick, as we are discussing tropicals in the presence of produce experts here. We'll come back when we tackle mangoes and those dragon eggs, Jeremiah, right back after the break. Stay tuned.
There ain't no need to go outside, but baby, you hardly even notice when I try to show you. Song is meant to keep you doing what you're supposed to. Waking up too early, maybe we could sleep. Make you banana pancakes, pretend like it's the week.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Hi, my name is Earl Herrick. I started Earl's Organic Produce over 20 years ago to bring the best certified organic produce to the San Francisco Bay Area. Still today, Earl's Organic Produce is sourcing only organic fruits and vegetables. Our core principle is healthy relationships with growers, the environment, and the clients we serve. If you are a business interested in offering the most delicious organic produce to your customers, please visit us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Sungevity, a company specializing in residential solar, is on a mission to bring solar to the mainstream market. Sungevity is changing the solar industry by making solar energy simple, efficient, and affordable for every homeowner. In most cases, Sungevity doesn't even need to visit your home to provide an estimate. Just plug in your address and we'll use satellite images and aerial photography to determine your home's solar potential. Go to Sungevity.com or call 866-SUN-4ALL to make going solar a reality today.
Marin Organic is an association of organic producers in Marin County, California, which has become one of the most progressive voices in the sustainable food movement in the United States. Through its many innovative initiatives, such as a school lunch and gleaning program, Marin Organic is creating a healthy, sustainable, and safe environment for all beings, today and for generations to come. Please become a partner in our work by visiting marinorganic.org and by pledging your support now. Thank you.
And we are back here to an organic conversation today all about tropical fruit. We tackled bananas and pineapple, and we're now discussing mangoes and hopefully cherimoya if we have enough time with Earl Herrick. We're in the presence of two amazing produce experts, Mark Mulcahy and Earl Herrick. Both of you combined, 60 years of produce?
Ooh, boy, it's 70, 80, the math 80. Gets staggering.
Okay, decades. Decades of produce wisdom. Fun. Thank you both for being in that world for so many years and bringing it to our listeners. Mangoes. We could do an hour show on mangoes, right?
I think so.
The varieties, the seasons, it's such a perfect mango. We had that amazing show with you, with Hayden.
That's a nice
one
variety.
Of the varieties. I don't want to say life-changing experience, but that was unbelievable. That really hit my core when I had that fruit. Half a year ago, 9 months ago, in another show with you, I think maybe this time around last year.
Well, generally, generally about this time. And Hayden has asked that you quit calling her, right?
Yes. Really? Do I have to? So mangoes, full of beta-carotene, vitamins, antioxidant, minerals. Many, many scientists now suggesting anti-cancer properties. Endless list of benefits. Earl, what's the story on mangoes? Where are they grown? How are they grown? What's the season really?
Well, you know, they're a tropical, subtropical fruit, and so they're grown all over the planet. And India actually grows the most amount of mangoes on this planet.
Yes.
The biggest exporter, however, is Mexico, but we get them from Peru, Brazil, Ecuador, but mostly Peru and Mexico. And what's interesting about Mexico, at least I think for us to easily understand, is that it's like any seasonality, it goes up the coast, like California goes up the coast, where in Mexico, in the main continent of Mexico, it goes all the way from Oaxaca up to Michoacán to Nayarit, all the way up to Sinaloa. So it'll start right now, and then it'll end up in northern Mexico, up by the Baja, in late summer, around August.
So you couldn't grow them in Southern California, for example.
Actually, you can.
Oh, you can.
There is, I know of at least one organic orchard, if you will, in the Coachella Valley. Wonderful mangoes. They're a Keith variety, K-E-I-T-T, which is not real prominent in the commercial world. But
delicious.
Delicious, low color. They're kind of green, incredibly smooth texture. Those are California.
Yeah, they're not going to ever have that deep orange color that you're used to seeing on mangoes in the store or anything like that. Yeah. They are greenish. And
I do want to quickly say they're September, October. That's a very short little window there.
Gotcha.
Mangoes tend to, even though we see them all year round, basically mangoes have two seasons, in the fall and in the spring. And then there's enough that's being grown during those times.
So stretch it a little.
It stretches it around.
Yeah.
Because
you see them at stores almost year round.
Yeah, because, again, you know, Peru's going to kick in, and then they're going to leave, and Ecuador is going to kick in, and then Mexico. So, yeah, they are pretty much year round now.
The spring is when the majority of them come to the United States, though.
Right now. This is when it's starting.
And you brought a bunch. What is coming in right now? What's in season? What's really good? Is it a good mango year?
Well, it's just starting. And it is. It's a little hard to, you know, when it's just starting, it's hard to really grasp everything. But, you know, the varieties that are generally seen and available are the Tommy Atkin, the Kent. Those are the two. And the Tommy Atkin is the real colorful one. Bright oranges and reds with a little bit of green and yellow. This is a Tommy Atkin, but it's early in the season.
Yes, so it's the size of a coconut about. It has like a little bit of green, a little bit of yellow, a little bit of red.
Yeah,
it's kind of the biggest mango that you would find right now, right?
Yeah, right now. That's like a 7 and an 8 count. That refers to how many are in a
box. It's like a pound.
Yeah.
Just for listeners to get a visual there. That's like lots of black little dots on it.
Yeah.
Tiny little dots. That's not bad. It's not a disease.
Not at all.
It's yummy. It's part of it.
Again, as you can tell, it's bright. It's not dull. It's not shriveled at all.
Yeah.
That is not quite ripe. But I would probably have it this weekend.
So how would you know it's not ripe? It's very firm, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now, mango is, as a hand piece of fruit, gentle pressure is going to yield to it a little bit.
Just like with avocados, you put them in the palm of your hand and it like to just you just know when it gives a little.
Now, different people, again, like them at different stages. Some people want them real soft, super rich and sweetness off the charts. Other people may be a little green. And then that's enjoyable too.
I would say this is how you, in the beginning of the season, will find most mangoes in the store.
Yes.
You said how long at home on the counter?
Well, I pulled it out. I took it off our warehouse floor on Monday. In the 2 days,
it has changed already.
Yeah, it has changed. So I'm thinking by this weekend. So we're talking about four, five, six days.
Put in your fruit bowl at your house.
And if you want to speed it up, Marcus, this is something you can put together with a banana
or an apple. Sure.
Really?
Absolutely.
A couple kiwi sitting around. Bingo. Mm-hmm. Nice. Now, how to eat it is just a great experience, too. There's several different ways. One is you lightly score it from end to end all the way around.
Yeah, I mean, there are 10 different ways.
Yeah.
Out of tropicals, I would say it's the most diverse fruit when it comes to philosophies about cutting them.
Yes.
Right? People peel them like a banana. They made four slices and then peel the skin only and eat them right there,
right.
Which is the worst way because you get everything between your teeth.
When and how do you hold
when
it?
You, exactly. Well, you can at the end a little bit, but it's so juicy at that point that it's like, so it's possible. And
well, in Mexico, they sell them on a stick. They peel them back and sell them on a stick.
Yeah, but if you really want it like juicy and all over you, then that's the way. Four slices, peel the skin back and you'll have a party. But Mark or Earl, I think, Mark, you did, right? You sliced it completely differently. What did you do?
Well, if you take the mango and you look at it vertically, if you hold it up in your hand and you look at it vertically, you can judge that probably about the center of that is going to have a seed that is going to be about, a half inch wide. And so you cut at that point and you cut lengthways down the side of the mango all the way around, and you'll actually end up, and you do that on both halves, and so you'll end up with two halves of mangoes.
One will have a seed, one will have not.
No, there'll actually be three pieces after you've cut them. There'll be two halves that you take off because you're leaving the seed in the center because you can't cut the seed with just a regular knife. And so you'd cut on the either side of the seed and create these two halves, and then there would still be a center section.
They're like, halves, but actually they have nots, right?
Well, they have not any more seed in them, right. Yes. And so you have a middle section with the seed on it too.
Great.
And then you would take that half and you would score it. You would hold the flesh facing up towards you and you would score it with a knife where you cut it lengthwise.
Yes. Checkerboard.
And then made a checkerboard, and then you would just fold it back. And so all the little pieces, and then you could just eat them right off.
Looks like a little mango porcupine. That is amazing.
It is a mango porcupine.
So two slices with the seed in the middle on either side, and then you cut a little grid into it, and then you peel the skin back into a half shape, basically negative fold.
Mm-hmm.
All the pieces you just cut like stick out. What a fun way, even for a party to display.
Here's another fun
amazing
way. If say you find yourself with some ripe mangoes, they're in the corner on your table. You somehow forgot about them. All of a sudden, the bouquet is overpowering. You go over, and it's a little soft. It's a little too soft to do the process that Mark just explained. Here you go. You take it in your hand and massage it, and you massage it to the point where the fruit is actually very pliable in your hand. Now you're not, you don't want to create any sort of a hole in the skin at that point, but you're massaging it. Then you do a little hole on one end, and then you squeeze the mango out of the hole. And it actually kind of like
But it would have to be, yeah, very ripe.
You got that's what I'm talking about. It's got to be ripe, and then you're massaging it, and you're breaking down the actual flesh inside into a semi-liquid, and then you can actually squeeze it out.
That sounds amazing.
You
can't do it, right?
Because none of these are ripe enough.
But can you imagine that you take someone out on your first date, and you say, let me do something for
It should
you
be
here.
The third date.
That's a third date.
Yeah,
I agree.
Mark, I mean, I don't know what you do on the first date, but that's a third date for me, a fourth. Whoa. Okay.
Yes.
You're listening to Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
We're talking mangoes, massaging mangoes with Earl Herrick, the founder and owner of Earl's Organic Produce.
Mark, obviously you've never had a mango massage.
We could talk more about mangoes, but same rules apply, right? If it's flavorful, if it's soft enough, you can store it on your counter. Don't put it in the fridge.
Right.
You can freeze them. Powerhouses of nutrients. And I do want to get into cherimoyas because it's one of the most underrated, and I say this with complete conviction, this is the most underrated piece of tropical fruit, at least, if not fruit. Many people will have never had one in their lives. And it's unbelievably delicious. It's called, what, the custard apple?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
And it looks like many people have seen them perhaps in the store, but, you know, just walked by or didn't know what to do with it or what make from out of it. It's it looks like, again, a pine cone shape. It's a dinosaur egg. It's a pine cone shape, green, lots of dents.
Skeleton.
Yeah, exactly. It looks like a crocodile, a baby crocodile in the shape of a turtle.
Right? Yeah, it's similar in size to a good size mango.
Yeah, maybe a little bit smaller, but some are quite big. Yes.
Yeah. And it's the skin's going to be kind of a dull green to a little browning. Maybe some might even have a little yellow tinge to it.
The scaling is really characteristic.
Yeah. And it will turn brown as it ripens.
Like a big pine cone that hasn't yet, you know, spread the little pine cone chunks that are on a pine cone when they get riper before they seed. So this is like a closed pine cone, but green. And
and they taper a bit from the stem end to the blossom end.
Yes, almost like a gigantic strawberry shape.
There you go.
Now that I'm looking at it.
Yeah.
Various degrees of ripeness. Usually when they come, they're really firm. And
really bright green.
Yeah,
yes.
Bright green and very firm, almost rock hard. And within a day or two, all of a sudden, they have give. And that's the time when I would eat them. You can wait for a few days until they you know, almost start to ferment, until they're so ripe that they're smushy, right? They become really, really soft. But Earl, fill us in.
A couple things.
I think this is the most delicious piece of tropical fruit, really, even with Hayden and mango. Yeah. Sorry, Hayden, but a perfect cherimoya is unbelievable because there's nothing like it. It reminds me of like fake lollipops that we got as kids.
Some people say it's almost like a bubblegum flavor.
Yeah, exactly. And you can still taste the health, obviously, and the texture and like everything about it. It's completely white flesh when you open it.
With little nickel size dark seeds in it.
Yeah, but you can eat the whole piece, half a dozen of them. And you just spit them out because they're so big and they easily come out.
And they'll go far too.
And so you want it to be gentle to the, you want it to yield to the touch, you know, and this is originally a South American piece of fruit now grown in California. There's some down in Fallbrook.
Are grown in California.
Yeah. Fallbrook down by San Diego, and also some down over in by Santa Barbara. Those are two areas.
And amazing for your skin, B1, B6, B9 vitamins, again, potassium,
be good.
Vitamin C, amazing. So if you never had one, cherimoya, ask for one. If you feel like it has a certain softness to it, at least, I would eat them on the firmer side, but have somebody in the produce department open one for you and try one, really try one, and let us know what you think, because it's the most unknown and underrated piece of fruit that's out there. It's amazing. It's
cherimoya.
And what did Mark Twain say about him?
Mark Twain said it was the most delicious fruit known to men.
Mark Twain.
Mark Twain.
There we go. Thank you, guys. Earl, thank you so much. What a pleasure to have your knowledge downloaded to be in your presence today. Fun. We'll have you back in 4 weeks when What's in Season, The Dirt On continues. Thank you, Earl, for being part of it today.
Great being here. Thank you, guys.
And that was this week's edition of An Organic Conversation. Thanks so much again to our guest today, Earl Herrick.
An Organic Conversation is a production of the Organic Media Network. Associate producer, Gina Birthday Girl Rustani.
For our blogs, podcasts, and more information on this show and previous shows, please visit our website at anorganicconversation.com.
You can also follow us on iTunes, Facebook, and Twitter, and we'd love to hear from you. Please send us your comments and questions to share@anorganicconversation.com.
We're your hosts, Helga Hellberg.
And Mark Mulcahy.
And we'll be back right here, same place, same time next week. See you then, and thanks again for being part of An Organic Conversation.
Bye-bye.